I'm very happy to welcome Anna Heller to the Classical Music Career Podcast. Very happy to have you here. Thank you so much for joining. And please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me. It was really a pleasure and honor because I started following your podcast and I learned already a lot from your advice that you share. And it is something special to be part of it. So not only to be a follower, but also to be an active participant. I'm based in Munich. I'm a classical pianist, and I'm also founder of Moving Classics TV. It's an internet platform for new piano music. I have a really different interest in all sorts of musical genres. I think I have a kind of reputation of being really very versatile, and I'm always curious to find new developments, innovations, searching for new formats, for new performance practices. And so that's some kind of a short introduction.
Thank you so much. So I would like to talk a little bit today with you about musicians online. And so let's start with Moving Classics. So what is Moving Classics and what is it doing?
Moving Classics started when I was searching for a way of reaching many people. So it was a kind of a time in my life where I was doing the salon in Munich. But, you know, it was kind of a small occasion where there were definitely some guests. But I wanted to reach more, and I wanted to share things with with the whole world. I mean, with the internet, I mean, we're thinking globally. So I was thinking for sort of a content that would allow me to communicate with the world and maybe to build up my own community. So at that time, I was always using Facebook, and I really like social media. I must say this is like something that I always enjoy. So I met one composer. He was Piotr Lachert. He's Polish, but he lived in Italy. And we became friends over Facebook, and he was asking, because he was at that time, I think 80, or he was already really well-established composer. And he became my mentor. And we were discussing about possibilities of starting something that's interesting and that's something new that not everybody is doing, like searching for the niche for me. And then he said, you know, I have this publishing house in Belgium, and they're doing the tonal contemporary music. There is something like tonal contemporary music. I must admit, at that time, I wasn't really aware of this. So it was new for me. And then he started sending me scores, and I started playing it. And then he said, why don't you do something online? So step by step, I started recording little things and then sharing them. And then I did a dedicated website where I would have a composer of the week. So every week there will be one composer and one work that I will present. We would do interview with a composer so that I can share more about them. And then I would use different platforms and share it with the world. So that's basically Moving Classics. This is like my passion, this is my hobby and my job. So
and do you feel like you were able to reach a wide audience with opening, with having that website?
You know, the thing is, this is interesting because now we are back to the question about the social media. And I think this is the experience that we all are going through. I mean, this is the case for everybody, that the audiences are going back. So in all the social media that we are using, we have negative trend. And I mean, it has something to do with social media. I mean, no need to say that Twitter has a crisis right now. Facebook is not really very popular in Germany, for example. Many people use closed profiles or they switch to Instagram. Instagram is overloaded with content. YouTube is also overloaded. So, I mean, LinkedIn, we'll talk about it, I think, especially. So this is the problem everywhere with the content that we have online. And I'm also affected because I'm not the only one doing it. I mean, surely in Facebook, I have 60 plus thousand followers. In LinkedIn, I have something like 31,000 followers. But in Instagram, I have only 3.6 thousand followers, and it doesn't grow, you know. So, yeah, I mean, we can talk about social media, you know, tricks too, but surely I would love to reach more. I mean, why not? I mean, like, not for me, but also for composers, because I find they are great. And I mean, some of them are emerging, and I mean, they are not known at all, but I mean, they should be, because I mean, they write music, and this is like the future, and this music should be played. So, I mean, I really want to do it.
Speaking of the numbers, it's an amazing, huge and very impressive numbers for anyone, but especially for someone working in classical music field. I think one of the huge benefits of what you do is what you say is that you are working with unknown composers and new composers. And I think that the usual media channels or newspapers, magazines, TV, they are more focused on well-established names, you know, on the stories that already known. But having someone who can present them to a wider audience like you, this is absolutely amazing. I'm actually curious about the subject of the content. Absolutely, we are overflown with content, and we keep creating more content and people everywhere. What do we do? How do we stand out as classical musicians online?
I think today the only way to stand out is to have something where you have your passion for. I mean, people feel it. I mean, it should be really authentic. And because they will notice that if it's created by artificial intelligence, or if it's just created because you think you have to sell something, you know, or you have to present your performances, you know, I mean, people understand it, so it doesn't really give them added value. So nobody will follow me for that. You know, every time when I post something about my performances, I might even lose followers because they think, oh, yeah, I mean, she's posting too much. I mean, people don't like it. But I think, I mean, like for me personally, I try to post things about new piano music. So this is like my area, and I stay with it. Surely from time to time I post things about my performances in general, but this is not the focus, and I try to be to stay with this and really be very consecutive and do it every week or even a couple of days on a row, so that people always notice, okay, she's doing this. And so I try to use the same formats. For example, the video recordings that I do, I use the same setting. I try to follow the rhythm. So it's like my videos are released on a certain day. I mean, now it's, for example, on Sunday. I changed it from Friday, so it's on Sunday. So that people know, okay, this is the time where you get new content from me. So if they like it, they can join me for this content. Because I know that now with these algorithms, this content won't reach them automatically because it's controlled by algorithms on the social media. So some people would really need to look it up, and they should know what to search for. And I think this is how we do, because imagine I would be doing posting something about Chopin. I mean, surely I can do this, but then I should be an expert on Chopin, right? I mean, I should really kind of find something special, you know. But you know, I cannot post like 10 most famous piano pieces. I mean, again, I could, but then I would need to add something personal to them. And this is like for me, it's, I mean, like my expertise is really in new piano music. So, and emerging, yes, exactly, emerging composers. I mean, of course, from time to time, I would take somebody who is already published. I mean, why not? If I like the music, I mean, but it's not a profile.
So it's like just like about everywhere else. You need to find a certain niche, you need to find a certain expertise. Then it's just, a curious question. Do you start it when you already have that expertise, or do you start about being passionate about something and you create expertise while you are doing, making your content?
I mean, this is a good question. Yeah, I'll be very open with you. So, I mean, like my character or that was really my profile. That when I was a little child, for example, and I mean, of course, I mean, I had this Russian piano school where I was, going through all this education process. Yeah, I loved just looking into the new music, and I wouldn't like practice the pieces that my teacher wanted me to. I would take books from my mom and I would just play all of them through, I mean, as I could. So, and I love this, and I still love doing this. So that is like me, I can sight read everything, and I'm always very curious about new music. So when this idea came to me from Peter Lachert, I was new to this field. I mean, like literally, I knew nothing about new consonant music. Like seriously, I mean, really not. But because I could very quickly gain this expertise, I could really make it my own, you see. So basically it's both. I started from scratch, but it was part of my character to be able to do it.
So it is like you don't need to wait to be an expert or a professional in something. You can, like, if first people have passions, they can also start and then go from there. So tell me, so far, what is the platform that you're focusing the most of your efforts?
I mean, I would say I try to use them all more or less with the same content. I mean, surely Twitter has its own limitations, but I use them all because it's easy. Once you have a post or you have content, you can share it everywhere. I mean, surely I differentiate because Facebook allows more fun or more personal information. Instagram is more picture or reel or video driven, and LinkedIn is really more like business, which means professional. So I try to follow the specifics of social media, but I try to really use them all. Why? Because I have the feeling that at the moment you cannot tell where your post will be successful, and they change, so they fluctuate, and there is something I have no control over. And I would say basically we all need something new where we would start from the scratch, you see. So I kind of personally think that Facebook will be fading out unless there is something happening there. So of course, I mean, I still have the most followers there, so this is my number one. But I really like LinkedIn. I find it very helpful, and it's also very international, and it has great features, and that's why I take it seriously.
I'm quite new to LinkedIn. I'm starting to really enjoy this platform because I find that it has the most curated content from people who publish it. The content is more professional. It's just easier to find something useful there. As a musician, what do you do on LinkedIn as its professional business platform?
I started using LinkedIn as I was, I think, one of the first musicians, because it was a long time ago, and at that time there were not so many. And I still remember when I started posting my musical content, I got some complaints from other people who said to me, "Why do you post music? Music is entertainment, and it has nothing to do with this platform." I would always answer them back, and I would say, "Music is my profession. I'm a professional musician, so I'm using LinkedIn exactly as you do, as an accountant, but my content is music. And step by step, you know, my community was growing, and I still remember the time where I could write this pulse articles. And at that time, it was a new feature introduced by LinkedIn. And, you know, when you use new features of any platform, they support you in spreading the word about you. So I was very lucky. My first article got really well reception, and it motivated me, and I was writing short articles about different things. I think I discussed if musicians should play for free, or what should they wear, or what is the character of a musician, you know, empathy and things like this. And I really got good feedback. But then this feature was slowly declining. So if you look at my articles, you will see this trend. And then I stopped doing it because, well, it's saturated. So I am speaking about LinkedIn. There is one thing that I really like about it, and is this networking possibility. This is a huge database of all the information about different people. So you have their position, you have sometimes their email, or you can also send them inline mail. I mean, I'm using premium feature, which is expensive, but it's really worthwhile to use it, because I see all these people, I can contact them, I can and it helped me really a lot during also my not only internet business. I mean, this is also something that you can use as a musician for your personal activities, because all the event managers are there, you have all the agencies, you have conductors, you have, I mean, you name it. So it's really very useful, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you get the possibility to contact someone who you're trying to reach, it's so hard to find someone's email. And when you write an email to like to an agency on their website, you do not know where it goes. Actually, exactly. Very, very interesting subject. So I think many of us are afraid to write this like cold messages, you know, like we are afraid to write to people who we don't know. How to start the conversation?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is something that you develop naturally. I mean, because I'm using it like every day, and I'm sending every day open messages, and I get messages from around the world. And I mean, of course, my channel is more or less known. So I'm getting every day like 5 messages from composers, and I try to answer them all. So that's why for me, it's like no problem to answer back. And that's why I also take this freedom for me to write to conductors or to big managers and say, hello, I am Anna, or I am Anna Hella. Well, depending, because in Germany, you're more formal, perhaps. Well, I try to see how this person is, or the position. And then I just try to be very polite, but brief. But I really want to be clear what I want from this person. So if I say, well, I would ask for your advice, then I get advice. And I mean, people do answer back. I mean, like, seriously, they do. I mean, if it's, they say no, but I mean, this is answer.
I know for myself. So I started a web development agency last year. And of course, as any agency, we need to write call messages and cold emails. And the first few times, it was so much stress for me. And also every no reply, I was taking it so personally. But at the same time, you need to know that like if you have a goal, and if your goal is good, you know, and if you you need to find answers, it's fine to write many people, be polite, be brief, and tell to the point what it is that you need. And then in the end, you know, that's the pleasure of the internet, that you don't only contact one person, you can contact, you know hundreds people potentially.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I think you know, this is also kind of a mindset, because you really have to realize that there is statistics behind, which means that in order to get like one reply, you might need to write 100 mails. You know, I mean, I'm just saying.
Absolutely. And that's why knowing those friends of mine, musicians who are saying like, oh, you know, I wrote to these three agencies and they didn't reply, you know, and I'm thinking like, yeah, probably like, you know, 300 would work in that direction.
Yeah. And I mean, some agencies or some event managers, they are honest and they say, I'm getting like 40 mails every day. So yeah, I mean, I got your letter, but you know, and then we are back to the previous, you know, speaking about what makes you special, you know, why you and not you, you know, so yeah, that's a question of strategy or like, why are you unique, which makes it a little bit more difficult, because I mean, you really need to know why you.
How do you suggest, like, how do we look at that part? So how to find your own uniqueness? Because I think it's clear that we all as persons, we are unique. But how do you find it and transfer it to music?
Yeah. And I mean, I know there is also a big dilemma because, I mean, we musicians, we are all very individual, right? I mean, we also feel ourselves very special in a way. And I mean, we really should because, especially when you perform and you have all the stress of the negative feedback that's possible or, you know, all this competition that's out there. I mean, if you don't feel your unique self, you just don't do it, you won't survive because the business is so hard. I mean, it's like really, really hard and it requires a lot of mental work. But first, as you said, I think the prerequisite is really understanding what makes your own self, which means that you are really clear about your strength and your weaknesses, and you try to concentrate on your strength, because I mean, surely you should work on your weaknesses, but there's like no way you can bring them up to the level because the others perhaps are here. So, which requires certain maturity. Yeah. And how to find this unique self? I mean, this is really a big gift that you have somebody who is a mentor, right? But not everybody has this. And even like getting advice from people is also something dangerous because at the end of the day, it's you and you are alone. I mean, if you are a musician like pianist, for example, I mean, basically we are like solo musicians. And I mean, speaking about your question, maybe I'm still searching for my persona because I try to kind of get to the next level. And I mean, we all try to get, you know, when we reach a certain level, we want to go to the next level. But to get to the next level, the higher you get, the more difficult it gets, which means that I need even more clarity. So this year, for example, I took for my personal development, because I really want to make it even more precise, because still for some people, it's not clear my profile, you see. So I guess this is really challenge number one for everybody and for me too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like just a few days ago, I was talking with one violist from the States, and he's just recently started his career coaching company. And it was interesting to hear from him that one of the first things that he as a coach focuses on is finding that unique story that the musician who comes to him has to offer. Yes, so like it's one of the most important for him, it's to find that uniqueness in each person, in each musician. And you know, this is something that for me as a student, okay, I played double bass, so I never had any hopes for a solo career, you know. But at the same time, so for me, I'm coming from Ukrainian school of music playing, so the only thing that I knew is practicing, you know, like, and to get better, you practice. To reach anything, you practice. Practice, practice, practice. And it's fine. It allowed me to get a job in the orchestra, you know, and so it's good. But after you practice and after you reach that level where you play more or less like, you know, a lot of people on that level, how do you go from there? You know, then it has really much less to do with your playing and much more with those things like finding a story, like having a good network, having good connections, and so on. Coming back to content and to social media, so How do you stay? Because you are consistently, every week you publish a new video, you publish on all the social media. How to stay consistent and how to create this kind of content creation machine around you?
Well, I think it requires some planning. So it's not like like I said today and I think, oh, well, now it's Monday evening, so why don't we create something? I mean, surely I can do this. And I mean, one should do this because this is, again, this is being spontaneous. It's perhaps something that I should work on, but it's not what we are talking about. I have the plan for the whole year. So I know already all the composers and all the pieces that I have in my pipeline. So basically, it's very methodical. So I take time, I choose, I select, and I always do things ahead. And I'm really like one, perhaps 6 months ahead. So that's why I have this all this content prefabricated. So that's why it allows me to have also things like, for example, I mean, like for me, for my performance practice, I'm also somebody who really likes jumping in for, you know, sometimes people are sick, and but I really love doing this. And I mean, because I can play from, you know, Prima Vista, and so I, for me, I mean, you call me and say, do you want to play tonight? I say always yes if I can. So that's why, yeah, which requires for me to have certain flexibility and to kind of be well balanced in my life and in my professional life. I need this kind of a preparation. So I always plan things. So I kind of write down, I think, okay, well, I'm next week, for example, I want to post about this and that. I mean, of course, I mean, I have like my constant posts that are continuing, and perhaps there are some topics. And so, but I already more or less know well ahead. And I think that for musicians, the timing, or you know, the time management is really the basis for their work, because otherwise it's you know, how can you survive? Like, seriously, I mean, it's a challenge number one, but it's also the prerequisite number one.
Absolutely. Wow. So you plan content for 6 months in advance.
Big picture, 1 year. Yes.
So this is what makes a successful content creator. I was the other day, I thought, oh, okay, I planned my post for the next 3 days. I was so proud of myself.
Sorry to disappoint you. I mean, but I think for some people, it may be something they will think, oh my God, she's worse than, I don't know, accountant or something.
Absolutely not. I mean, when we start creating content online, and this is something that I'm now learning from a very scratch, because I, as an orchestra musician, I never needed to produce any content, you know. And I think when you are being consistent, and when you are actually planning this so well, and when you have a consistent day and consistent type of post, also that your audience feels that you take care of it, and that you care of them, and that gives them a reason to stick around and to continue following and supporting. And so, wow, something for me new to learn today. This is how you plan in advance.
I think exactly this is the credibility, I think, because people want to trust your content.
Do you batch produce content? Do you sit down for one sitting and then you create many pieces of content for the future?
Well, you see, I used to do that. But I noticed that when I sit a long time on on one content, I tend to get more flexible as the time goes. So personally, but you know, it really has to do with my character. So I need different activities. You see, I mean, maybe somebody is different, so they sit 2 hours. And I prefer to work in short episodes. So I prefer to change, because when I change activities, I get better. And if it refers to everything. When I practice, I mean, I start practicing like really with bar, and like the third hour, I'm just playing through, you know, like seriously, I mean, as I can, which is, and the same with the content. So that's why I know this. And when I notice, oh, I am on the stage where I'm just, oh, okay, well, it's good, I like it. So I stop and I put it aside, do something different, and come back and produce it. I mean, surely it's better to have batch content, but you still need some room for spontaneity, because I mean, you really want also to react to the things that are happening, you know. So this is also the trade-off, you know. I mean, this is something that I also improve, because, you know, yeah, you need to react, you need to be able, but again, you know, this is like the next level.
Yeah, no, and also, first of all, we are still, with everything that we do, we are still, first of all, musicians, and the most priority goes to playing the live concerts and live events.
Yeah, and I mean, it's true, and I mean, we need time for personal development, and I really want to learn new pieces, and I mean, I want to improve my technique, and I mean, I really have many things to do, so yeah, so that's why I completely agree with you. This is like the priority, and the rest is really what we can do. Yeah.
With your experience in all of these platforms, and also all over the years of being a content creator, and it takes so much time and so much effort and consistency and everything. So, what are actual benefits for a musician to be a content creator online?
This is I thought you will ask this question, and I was thinking about it. I took it really seriously, even without knowing you or knowing that you will ask this question. I asked this question myself, and if I may add something to your question, I will make it even more complicated, because now we are speaking, it's like one way, you know, like I am creating and I'm sending everything, and I'm really like producing a huge deluge in all the social media. But imagine there is the other side. There are people out there, and they are getting all this content from me again and again and again. So basically, when I create my content, I want some feedback. Yeah, I want views, I want likes, I want comments. So now we are back to the question about the benefits. So the question number one, like, why am I doing this? I mean, is it like I'm just sending, and once it's posted, I just shut down my computer and go and relax? But it's not the case, because we want to get something back from it, because it's really the input. It's part of our life. We take it seriously, and I think it's absolutely natural that we want to have something back. Speaking about what do you get back? I mean, surely you can get followers, and followers are your potential clients, your audience, who will buy tickets or who would buy services that you offer online, for example. They can be producers, they can be managers, they can be agencies. So anybody out there is your potential benefit, I think, right? So this is also important to keep in mind. But basically, anybody who is sending you any art of attention is your client, is something valuable. Because, you know, today, bad comments are great to have, you know? I mean, you don't really need only good comments. The worst thing to have is to have zero views, to have zero comments, because this is like the end of it. You know, you're not getting any further. I mean, surely platforms like YouTube, or now in Facebook with all the stars, they offer monetary benefits. But we don't, I would say that classical musicians seldomly have the conditions to get it monetized, which is a problem. So basically, you don't get money for all the content that you are sending out there. And this should also be clear, because to create a content, it's not only time, it's sometimes also the monetary expenses. Which makes it a little bit difficult for some musicians, because we are not Sol Gabetta, you know, with all these concerts around the world. You have to manage your personal budget very, very tightly. And all these platforms, they want you to buy their monetary services, which means that I certainly buy Facebook adverts or Instagram adverts. I pay for LinkedIn, things like this. which makes it expensive for me to produce content. And I mean, all the videos that I produce, I also pay for myself. And which is also kind of trade-off. So what do you get from this? Certainly for certain people, they have their cutoffs. I mean, I don't really know the figures right now because I'm not really in this segment where I would say, I think it was something like 100,000 followers in Twitter to get a DECA contract, but maybe I'm wrong, so I don't want to give any figures. But I mean, you know it yourself. If somebody has 1 million followers, they might get a record company. But with 60,000, you don't get any record company. I mean, it's like even if
Yeah,
it's a lot.
I think it's also easy to put, in a sense of like why followers matter, because I was just this morning with my breakfast was watching this cooking show, and there was a restaurant that
Okay.
had 45,000, Instagram followers, and they were
Wow.
looking for investment, and it was not even a restaurant, it was just someone running from the kitchen. And then the investor says, well, for another restaurant to get 45,000 followers from zero, it needs to be at least 100,000 euros spent in marketing. So, there is your like
Exactly.
exact benefit that someone doesn't need to spend that much money in your marketing.
And I mean, we all know to get new followers, I mean, this is like horrendously expensive, like seriously expensive. Because you know, you think like you invest 10 euro a day, but you get like zero views, you know? And this is like one post. So I mean, this is like unrealistic. I mean, like seriously, it's just don't even start, you know, because it doesn't get you anywhere. And I mean, it depends also on let's say some event managers, because some don't take Facebook seriously. So you say, oh, I have some followers, and they say, well, so what? I mean, do you have a newspaper talking about you? And you say, well, maybe I have like, well, three. And they say, well, okay, well then call us when you have more. I mean, surely they are old-fashioned, but like this, I mean, they want your newspaper critiques. They don't want your followers on Instagram. So it's difficult, like what you get from it. Attention, I guess. Yeah. I mean, any sort of attention. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's like even if not to go too much into like the followers numbers and all of this, it's still as musicians, it is part of, and of course we are all different. I've met many musicians who hate social media and who don't like it, and who don't want to do it, and it's absolutely fine and it's their choice. And if you just want to be on stage and only communicate with the audience through your music and being in the with the instrument of a singing, it's also fine. But at the same time, just the social media and any of this gives us such so much bigger opportunity to talk to our audiences and to bring them something to their life that otherwise someone would not. And it's not that the content is, of course, there is so much of everything and it's so hard to be, unique in that way. But at the same time, you might find just those words that reach someone. On one of the previous episodes, we talked with someone, and I said that also when it's exactly what you say, that the content is not just something that you push out into the world and you forget about it. It's the people who receive it. And I think this is one of the most important things for us as musicians to think is that social media and internet gives us the opportunity to share our knowledge and our experience and our expertise with people who would otherwise not have opportunity to do so, to get this,
Absolutely.
like because not everyone can study in Juilliard and not everyone can be in London, and so
Absolutely. Yes. I agree with you completely. And you just get something back. I mean, this is really the energy that you receive, and you also get all this love of your followers, and it motivates you. And I mean, they also give you feedback, and it can be very constructive feedback. So, I mean, I really love creating content on social media, and I would always look for interesting content for me, because there are some musicians whom I follow. And I find it also very enriching.
Yeah, and I think what I'm learning now also from starting being doing more in social media is that there is that word social in media, and it should be social, because there are many musicians who just do this outbound content, like, you know, I played here, here is me, but then there is no communication with the audience. And I think that is quite a mistake, because already for being on social media for, like, I don't know, 3 months, I've met so many interesting people and made so many interesting connections that I would otherwise not, that, like, and in this way of communication, I'm thinking, where was I all these years? You know, it's so interesting to meet these people and talk to them.
You can also communicate with the star.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And try to get to those stars after the concert backstage. Whoop. So Anna, tell me, so through your experience, what do people like the most? So you probably see it all in the analytics and statistics. Yeah. What kind of content works the best?
I mean, I talk only about myself, you know, so I can talk about myself. So, because I know that there are different kinds of content that people like even better. But people like opinions. I mean, people really like to hear what I have to say, not something like general truths about about music. The content that gets the best traction or the best exposure is when I share my thoughts. So that's what people want to hear. So it's they like it. I mean, surely they also like good pictures. I mean, this is nothing new, something really that kind of sticks out. But they like originality. They people follow me because they know that I bring new ideas, that I have kind of innovations, and I have something different that they won't find anywhere. That's why they come to me. And that's why I try not to disappoint them. And surely it puts a little bit of pressure on me now, because I mean, I know that this is the expectation, but this is part of me. So when they are curious and I'm curious, and there is always something new happening, so these things will get the best views.
So also another question, when you already reach this kind of follower base like you have, you are obviously like this huge influencer in classical music industry, you know, being online. So how is it in classical music? Do companies and brands approach you and try to do some kind of deal with advertising and things like that?
Well, very few. I had some, but they wouldn't really fit into the into this classical music business, because I also look at the benefits, what should it bring. I would say it's more the other way around, that I try to reach to them and I try to search for product placements, but not the other way around. I think you really need to be bigger so that you get more interesting suggestions.
It's interesting, because I would have somehow imagined, you know, that is there not that many like classical musicians who are producing like a consistent content that has a subject, that has a core, that has an idea. You know, like I see a lot of people who are like on Instagram with a lot of followers, and a lot of those that content is, you know, very nice reels just from a bedroom, you know, practice sessions and things like that, but which obviously works. However, you know, it's, for me, it's hard to see like what kind of extra benefit you get, you know, from this kind of content, just like it's, and especially when it's all the same. So I would have imagined that something like your, this, you know,
No, unfortunately not, no, but I try to reach out to them. So this is something that I really believe in synergies. And I think today, you cannot really succeed alone. I think this is also the trademark of our times, that you can succeed only when you are integrated into the network, or you are integrated into the chain of different people. So, I mean, I'm all for cooperations, like seriously. I mean, I find it's very beneficial for both. And I don't know, maybe it has to do with the visibility, you know.
How do you deal with negative comments online?
Oh yes. I have for the moment, I really even have a big dilemma myself, because I got like last week a negative comment myself, and I have problem relating to them. And usually I mean, put it this way, you know, I'm not 20. So I can filter things, but it still requires some work. I mean, if I were 25, I think I would stop playing, like seriously, because it does hurt me. I'm Leo, you know, from the horoscope, and somehow I really like. It's not like I'm perfectionist, but I mean, I like getting, you know, at least, you know what, if I can understand your critique or feedback, I accept it. But if somebody writes or somebody says she doesn't have a soul, or she doesn't, she plays with many wrong notes, and I listen and I don't hear them, or somebody says she plays with the wrong rhythm, and I just hear, okay, yes, it's my interpretation. I accentuate something, but come on, you know, so I kind of, I don't know. I have a problem with that. I would say, I mean, the best is if you can just ignore them, because if you have a troll, and I mean, I used to have some trolls, I mean, definitely you block them if you can, and you just kind of ignore them. But sometimes this negative feedback goes to your managers, and this is a big problem. And I haven't found the answer to that, because they kind of get led by this, and that's why I said before, this is so dangerous, because, you know, like one comment, I mean, even you say, well, of course, I mean, everybody says, forget it, I mean, but somehow it can hurt so much that you start self-doubting. Sometimes you really need even professional, for example, professional help, because once I played in one hotel and everything went well, and when I finished, I could hear there was one man like talking to the director of this hotel, who was like saying something, and they were watching to me, and I could see on the face of this lady, she was like going like really from this to this. And when I finished playing, I mean, surely it wasn't great. I mean, I know it myself, but I mean, it was okay. I mean, especially, you know, like for this situation, I mean, it was okay. But she was like, okay. And she never talked to me again after that. And she never explained. And I mean, I couldn't, and it kind of, and it was I was much younger. It's really like over 10 years ago, but I got such a problem. You wouldn't believe it. And sometimes I would even have panic during playing. And some pieces, when I play them, I still get this, because I don't know, it just influenced my brain so much. And I really went to different coaches and consultants so that they helped me to deal with that. I mean, it's like little trauma that you get, that you need to kind of filter it again, you see.
Yeah,
so that's
it's
why
interesting. I really liked it, what you said about creating a persona, because, you know, it's something that I've been also thinking now, since also being more on social media. And we talked about it with one manager on one of the previous episodes, and he said that there is nothing wrong with creating a persona, that of course we need to be authentic and we need to be ourselves and be honest with, but at the same time we do need to create this you know, stage presence or social media presence, which can be a little bit separate. And maybe that allows you not to take things so personally, because then when someone gives you a comment, you know, on your YouTube or on your Facebook, you're like, well, it's about this persona, it's not me, you know, it doesn't go.
Yeah,
so
very, very, very clear thought. I like it, yes. I mean, I haven't articulated, but exactly, yes, yes. It's your protection, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a lot of protection, because you see, there are so many people out there. And I mean, like, have you thought about the competition? I mean, like, not everybody is really very, you know, I mean, nobody talks about it, but I mean, this is all these movies, you know, about the pianist putting the glass in your gloves. I mean, it happened to me, you know, when I was in Russia, you know, people put things like this, you know, and try to destroy. I mean, it's from my life, you know, when they you go on stage and they destroy the they put something between the keys, or, you know, something, or they do the psychological tricks. For example, you are about to go to compete on stage, right? And the competitor comes and sits down and says, "Ah, what are you playing tonight? Ah, you play, I don't know, Fantasia Schumann. Yeah, have you thought in the middle there is this figure there and there?" And then even if you said that, you go on stage, you play, and this figure in the middle of there, you start thinking. And then, for example, me, I get mixed because I think about it. Or there is something like, oh, you cannot play by heart, or something, oh, you can, it's way too difficult. You know, the simple things, you know, you say, oh, but I mean, this piece is not for competition. And you, things like this, you know, and all the psychological tricks. And today, it's even much, much easier, because all you need to do, you just write some feedback online and everybody reads it. I mean, you can create different sounds, you know?
Yeah.
So dangerous, you know? That's why we need musicians really kind of a stable mind in order to deal with that, to understand the motivation behind the bad critique, you know? Because, I mean, why would I write bad critique? Like, seriously, why? Like, I don't have time for it. I mean, if something, I don't with something, then I just, you know, I turn it on, off. But I would never spend time sitting and writing feedback.
It's, you know, I think you need to understand when you are online and when you are reading this bad feedback about yourself, you need to think like how sad is the person on the other side of the screen who takes the time of the day to write these words. You know, we should be just sorry for them, you know, not taking it personally. You know, it's like interesting, just the point about the self-doubt that can be by other people. When I was a student in school, there was a colleague or a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, who once said to me, "Hey, you play nice bass, but you know, you don't have sound, like you don't have a big sound."
Yes,
and you know, and I took it so much to heart, so I've been like trying to play louder and louder and louder. And then at some point, you know, like 8 years later, I thought, but like, or someone told me like, but man, why do you play so loud? You and I realized that I have this huge sound, and that my whole life, I've been like, just not, for these 8 years, I've been just pushing because one person said one comment, you know, no one else ever said it.
But sometimes it's just one comment that kind of, I mean, why? But you know, the mind is so funny sometimes, huh? And it's all so irrational. That's why I really watch out.
Yes. So when you record the video, because so you produce the content every week, when you record the video, how do you make a decision that the video is ready?
I mean, I do it also a little bit pragmatic because I play all these pieces that I always do it in batch, you know, so I kind of book a day, you know, for recording. So I practice at home, and then of course I allow time to for pieces to grow, but then okay, there is a deadline. Surely if I notice that the piece is not ready, I would just switch, because I mean there are so many, and I have a kind of difficult system of which piece is ready. But during recording, they are not edited, you see, it's live recording. So that's why I sometimes, yes, I do have raw notes there, but it's live. It's not edited, because I mean, you know, for Spotify, for my albums, it's really professional recording with all the cut and slices. But my YouTube videos, they are not cut, and I live with it, because for me, maybe you should see it as a kind of a, maybe I should also name it differently. It's like readings. You know, it's not a concert performance, and it's not my aim. It's not my, you know, trailer for acquiring concerts. And some pieces are not for concert either. You know, they're just readings. They are presentations. They are, interpretations.
Yeah. So, and I think this is absolutely amazing. And I think that the composers are very lucky to have a person like you who can present their music and bring their music to life and to audiences. Because I would rather have someone like you who can present every week a different piece and introduce me to a new music than someone who would spend months preparing and producing like one piece a month or one piece in 2 months, you know. So therefore, I think how you do it and what you do is absolutely fantastic. 500 composers, you said you connected with over 500 composers over this time.
I mean, over the last years, over 500 composers I communicated with, and I recorded their videos.
It's really fantastic.
A lot, actually. I mean, it was really a lot of work. I mean, but it's really interesting because they are really so different.
How do you find the people that you want to showcase on your Moving Classics TV?
I mean, like, to be honest, now I don't find them at all because either they send me the information or I have already them in my in my pipeline, and I just cannot really record them all. I mean, this is my big wish. I would like to do more, you see, because I feel also kind of obligation toward them. I mean, perhaps it sounds a little bit crazy, but I find, you know, like, because I know it myself, when I apply and I get like rejections or I get no answer, I it kind of hurts, and I really don't like this at all. So I try to answer everybody, but I cannot record or play everything. I mean, certainly there is some music that it's just not mine. I mean, okay, this is one thing, but there is music that is mine, but I don't have capacity. And this really hurts too, because I would love to do this. But in order to do this, I would really need some kind of a framework. To your question, I mean, like, before I would listen to YouTube, I would listen to Spotify, and I mean, I do it today. When I notice something, I write down and I go back, or, you know, somebody gives me a tip. There are so many possibilities. You have all these wonderful groups, you have communities. I mean, the information is out there. The problem is we have too much information, and how to process this information and to kind of get the information that is important for me, you see. And I mean, of course, I tried to play the music that's kind of more or less fits into our time. So I'm not a musical critic or somebody who is deciding, you know, okay, this is good piece of music and this is not. You know, I really tried to show everything. So I really don't go into this quality thing, you know. But still, you know, to decide what to play and what to record, this is like really essential.
From your experience as someone who is getting this information and needs to make a decision, what makes an interesting pitch?
You know, there are two things. First thing, I always play a music through. When I get it, this is really something that I always do, even when I don't have time, but I do play all music that I get. It should kind of, because, you know, it's internet. So I kind of see if the piece strikes to me the first time I play and listen to it. So this is like, my algorithm number one, because otherwise it's difficult to present it, because there are pieces, they are like good wine, but they need time. So, I mean, I might record them, but perhaps at a later date. So there must be something that kind of strikes to me, something particular about it. I mean, certainly it can be only the title, but the title makes it interesting. I mean, I agree, yes. I would still record it because it interests me. There must be something special about it. Again, I should be able to play it because, I mean, basically it became my piece. So it should be my music too. So that's why I perhaps don't play particular style of music, but I mean, that's my channel after all. So.
This is amazing. You know, I love that you said that you play it all through. This is so impressive.
Yes,
and
I do. Yeah, even if I cannot, I still try.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Like really all of them. And I have my, you know, iPad where we are talking. So it's full of this music and I really enjoy it. I mean, for me, this is like my quality time. It's the best time that I have. I really kind of enjoy looking through new music. So this is like fun time.
Yeah, I think, you know, if people, when the composers will hear that you read through all the music, you would get even more, you know, because...
Yeah, I mean, good, because I really, I mean, I'm always looking for something special. And I mean, this is, you know, this is, I mean, I must say, unfortunately, but this is like really true. I mean, look at all these pianists or all these composers. I mean, we are getting good music and I'm getting like really good music, but we are all searching for something like sensational. I mean, this is how it works. Yeah, I mean, I really don't like it because I find that, you know, that especially in the classical music, the expectations are crazy. I mean, they are like really crazy, because if we play, we should play like Horowitz from the technical point of view and Rubinstein from the interpretational side, you see? But I mean, who can play like this? And if people play just really well, it's not good, you know? Like, seriously, it's not. So that's why, you know, that's why speaking about the composers, I mean, it makes always sense to send one more score and to produce one more composition, because, you know, there is a masterpiece out there somewhere in the world. I feel it. So there's always place for really, really good music, always.
Yeah, well, you know what you said, it's interesting that people expect, yeah, that you need to play like this, and just the expectation,
yes,
is so high. And I'm wondering where, you know, where it's coming from. Like, is it just because of the recordings that we are so used to the sound of the CD, which is polished, you know, or is it just because everything became so global? Because, you know, in the old times, when people moved with carriages, there would be just like that many people who could come to your city or to your village to play, right? And you would have this local artist performing there, and this is all you know. But now we live in such a global world, and when we were doing some research with my company about who is performing in which venues, and when you go through this top A-class venues, it's really the same list of people. It's the same list of musicians over and over, and year after year, you know? And of course, there are this like smaller concerts and like lunchtime concerts and everything, but the evening concerts, the main concerts, is pretty much the same.
I agree with you completely, because you know, I thought about it also a lot, because as I'm a concert pianist, I have to deal with feedback from the audience, and this is something that's on my mind at the moment, because how you deal with it, because you always get it, and there is always somebody out there who gives you feedback and they say, oh, this is like a disaster. Yeah. And you try to understand. And I personally think that the problem is exactly the availability of the music. And many people out there, they are sitting with earplugs the whole day long. And I mean, of course, they are passionate about piano music, for example. And I mean, they listen and listen and listen. And it happens to me too. For example, it's really funny, actually. I got so in love with Horowitz playing, you wouldn't believe it. I think that was, of course, I mean, it was the Träumerei, this river, and I was listening and listening, and I played it, and the YouTube, and I recorded, put it online, and the YouTube said to me, oh, this is not your recording, because some sequences are exactly as Horowitz, because I heard it hundreds of times, and certain sequences were like this, which is really not good, because you know, but people have it in their mind. This is the idea how the piece should be. And then imagine I play really well-known pieces. And if it's not the same tempo, or if I over-accentuate, and I mean, I tend to do this, you know, I really love rubato personally very much. So my tempo or my rhythm can be different. And I find it something like, it's me, but some people find it very irritating and they find me very unmusical. And I mean, of course, there is music where it doesn't need rubato. I agree completely. But still, if it's not the your image, and you get it from me, you really need to be either open person or you need to understand something of music, about music, in order to say, well, yes, but this is your interpretation. So that's why musicians who offer really good standard interpretations, especially at the beginning of the career, they get further. I mean, at a certain level of your career, you can allow yourself to be unique and specific, and you can play something totally different. People will accept it, but at the beginning, they won't accept it. You'll get just bad critic, yeah, which is a problem, I think. And it's also for me, when I learn piece and I listen, it influences me.
But in this sense, it's like I feel that probably it's almost it's liberating, right, to play new music that no one heard before.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, I personally am all for freedom. I really don't like the standard interpretations, which is sometimes really harmful for me, because there are some venues and there are some concerts where people expect exactly what they expect. Yeah, and that's why I prefer to be the first to play something, because you know, there is no prejudgment, and I don't like standard judgments, you know. So, but again, it's a question of character. I mean, sometimes it can be very helpful to listen to interpretation and learn from it, but I would always say I prefer to listen to several and then choose my own. But I mean, of course, we are influenced by all these famous interpretations, which makes our playing not original. And then again, you should be genius yourself in order to repeat the playing of genius, you know.
But yeah, but at the same time, you know, music, it's not this exponent in a museum which lies under glass and everyone can come and visit and appreciate it. You still need someone to perform music in order for it to be alive. So, you know, I would say that whether we are geniuses or not, if we like playing music, we should continue playing it.
Absolutely, yes. And I mean, and there should be the danger of live music. I think this is the major point. That's why I think the concerts should be, I would say, I mean, personally, if it were an ideal world that I certainly would love to have, musicians should experiment more, you know? They should really try many different things, like new repertoire, and just play raw notes, play different pieces, but just try them out with the audience, you know? Why should you always play the repertoire that you already played 15 times in smaller venues, and then you bring it to Munich or London or Berlin? I mean, of course, I mean, I understand now why. Yeah, but you know, I mean, it shouldn't be like this. You know, the audience should be kind of hungry for the danger of new things. I mean, they should be really thirsty for this. I think there should be audience out there for this kind of performances, and not the standard performance, you know, that you can play in the middle of the night, and this is so automatic that you can really, I don't know, read newspaper at the same time as a pianist. I mean, I'm not interested in these performances, I mean, as audience, because I mean, of course, I know I can play it, but it's like there's no danger, there's no life, it's just repetition, you know. This is it's not interpretation, isn't it? Because interpretation,
I absolutely agree.
Lively, it's something fresh, it's something that appears. But when you have it automatic in your fingers, sorry, this is the reproduction.
I completely agree with you. It is those concerts where you feel a little bit of danger, you know, like that's when something exciting happens. And I think that energy, you know, it transmits. And so, you know, when we can talk, of course, like, in, you know, a lot about classical music audience and how many audience we have and what age the audiences are. But I think part of that is on event organizers and program planners and on musicians, because we often just do not create this kind of special events that make people excited, that make people experience something special. We just often just reproduce music that's been written by geniuses, and we have a certain way to make it. And so we definitely need to look for new formats. Speaking of concerts, actually, I saw a question on your LinkedIn profile. So Online concerts. Did you do online concerts during the COVID, before COVID?
Yes, and this is also a part of your other question. It was Metora company. Metora company was a startup in Corona time, and they approached me with the idea to try their platform. So basically, that was their idea. They said, "Okay, we are developing it from the scratch. So why don't you just try it?" So yes, I started doing it, and maybe it was perhaps strategically not the right move in a way that some people were doing it over YouTube, which I could have done too. But because I was with Metora at that time, we were doing it, I think we did it half a year. And it was perhaps once a month. And we tried, I did it from my room. So I moved my instrument and put this iPad again and tried it to stream the concerts. The problem was technical side. I mean, they had problem what Skype, for example, also has, or I think Zoom has it too, with this lag. And it was also for me really problem of my internet connection at home, although I really had really the best, but for some reason at certain time of the day, I had a problem with the internet. And it also went into the performance. So people were not really happy with the quality. So I had a very small circle of people. I mean, they were really my followers, the most active followers. I stopped afterwards, and Metora stopped existing anyway because, well, unfortunately, yes. And I kind of decided not to do it again because of the simple reason. I mean, in order to do it, I need some technical equipment. So either the question was either I invest into it, yeah, and I organize it, or I just decide that for the moment it's not really important for me. So I do my content creation as I always do. So, and basically my decision was not to do it. Yeah. Although I like the idea of hybrid concerts. I mean, I would personally really love to do this, but it's a question of money, because I mean, of course, I know people in Munich who could do this, but it's still very expensive, and I would need to organize it myself. So, well, for the moment, I mean, I do believe that it's a good idea, and personally, I watch some concerts from different halls from time to time, although I must admit, I never really watch them online as the concerts take place. I always watch them when I can. So again, which makes basically no difference if it's pre-recorded or if it's just really streamed. So
This is, actually also interesting point about watching online concerts. Just some days ago, my friend sent me a link. They were like, "Oh, we are performing here. Here is the link." And I sat down in the evening. I watched the concert, and I was thinking, if it was just a stranger's concert popping up somewhere on Facebook, I would have never watched it. I would have never done this. And this is exactly the point of social media. You develop relationships with your audience, you build this engagement, and people start feeling like you are a friend. So then the moment when you have that concert streaming and you have these followers who feel like you are a friend, they would actually watch it, but not just some strangers who simply follow you.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree. Yes, because it's like being with you at this time. So there is something specific or something special about this time. But if it's like somebody, a star performing out there, I am star at home too, so I decided I watch it, yeah, right?
Yes, absolutely. So if you could, give advice to young musicians who are developing their careers and who are thinking about social media content creation and being active online as well as offline, what would you be your recommendations and suggestions to them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, draw a line between your personal life, so to say, as you could show. You shouldn't, really, you shouldn't, because I mean, internet is such a dangerous place. I mean, we're speaking now, I'm talking like as if I am like 100 years old, but I mean, okay, I am older, so yes, I would really warn all the young musicians who start, because especially perhaps, I mean, we musicians, we are really very fragile. I mean, we should be, we're very sensitive. This is part of our nature. That's why we should also watch our feelings. We should protect ourselves. There are so many people out there, you don't know them. And I mean, like, I mean, it sounds really a little bit trivial, but the world is dangerous. And so you need to create persona. Yeah, so this is the public person, yeah, and this is the person who is out there. I mean, if you really want to have private account, you do your private account, but you really differentiate between your virtual life and your professional life and your private life. Private life remains always private, and I would always decide for online presence, because today it's just it's not like, do I want to have it or not? I mean, you have to have it, you know, period. And you really should have it. And it helps you because it gives you clarity about yourself. It helps you for your career. You know what you do. You know how you develop yourself. You see what are your weaknesses. You get reaction. I mean, it brings many positive things. So there's always positive, but you have to manage it with care. Don't overdo it. Just find your balance, what you can manage with your resources that you have, because it's all individual. You know, we all have different situations. We all have different times, because I mean, I know some musicians have to have day jobs or occasional jobs to finance their great pictures. And don't get discouraged by the competition, because I mean, like today, to be a musician, you always look like a model. And I mean, how do you manage it? I mean, you go to a professional photographer who does really wonderful makeup and all this Photoshop pictures. But at the beginning, you think, wow, how can I do this? This, but, I mean, you can do it, but you really have to take care of it. And you have to kind of make a plan, what you want to achieve, and do it really step by step, because, you know, life is long, and you have a long way to go, and just start today. I think that's my advice. I think I talk too much, as I always do, but
thank you. This is a great, absolutely great advice and a great conversation. Anna, thank you so much for joining. It was a pleasure talking to you, and so much great information, great insights, and I appreciate being here. And thank you so much. And everyone, please go and check out what Anna does and follow Moving Classics, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and see all the great things that Anna does. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.